extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, CD9, Chuck D, and the one, the only, the super supporter, Austin FC, TID, give me breakfast tacos only. It is David Goss, and I cede the floor to you, David. You're knocking things off your desk already. You were hyped. You were an absolute menace in the group chat last night, and I can't understand why. If you weren't there since the beginning, yeah, our group chat.
Is that a text message conversation or a Twitter conversation?
I don't know. I mean, both probably.
Oh, really? I thought it was a private text message conversation until I opened up Twitter and saw my text. Charlie, is a text message something that you already okayed to be put out as a tweet? Can you help me with legal guidance here?
Yeah, I would say no.
Yeah,
you're saying that's
you're violating
the
sanctity of the group chat right there. So I don't know that'll be in there anymore. Let me take the floor for a second.
Whoa! Time out. That sounds like an admittal. That you believed that the first goal that Austin scored shouldn't have counted because you just confirmed the veracity of those texts. I'm just saying, No, you did it. It's on record.
What I said was that you said you posted things out of the group chat. I didn't say that they were actually there.
Attorneys are certainly listening.
Listen,
and my attorneys will talk to
we're
you.
We're going to talk to Bobby Wood and Howard Webb in a little bit. But let me take the floor for a second and let me open up some space here. Andrew Wiebe last year picked LAFC to win the double, and they didn't make the postseason. Then this year he's like, oh, I don't know. They won three regular season games, and last week you and Charlie both picked them to win Open Cup as your favorites because you're already smitten because you're so in love with LA. And then Austin FC steps in, and I'm looking at you, Andrew Carlos Velo Wiebe, and they step in and they just smash it in your face, yammed into your face on the road against the run of play at times, challenged from all areas. And yet, as one green unit, they stand up and they succeed. Diego Fagundes, you, Andrew, on this show 3 years ago said, Diego Fagundes can't play in MLS. I remember you saying that.
I didn't say that.
He didn't say that. I lied about that. He steps up. Sebastian Druisi, who you were doing Russian Premier League podcast saying, this guy's not good enough for Zenit St. Petersburg. Now he's got as an MVP candidate in Major League Soccer. Maxi Arruti shooting arrows from the other side of the world. Brad Stuver's back in the game. You question them. You never believe, and we are back. We believe. The people have stood and spoken. Enough with your corporate talk.
I want to just say this. You know, look, I may have not been, quote, on the bandwagon from the very beginning, but there are different ways that different people are able to contribute to success. And I just want to know, Dave, after this game, did Austin FC players run to the locker room to tweet thanks to you, to pay homage or tribute?
Anders, cut his audio.
Words? No, they didn't. Felipe Martins ran to the locker room.
Shirt 3 days later? You doing
keep
laundry
doubting
over
us.
There?
Keep doubting us. We don't clean off the smell of winning. The Black and Verde, that's true. That's a little bit questionable.
Yeah.
I just threw it back on just for the celebration. A lot of yelling.
I have nothing to say about this right now.
Everybody that's
Charlie,
not
I'm
an
coming
Austin
for
FC
you
fan,
later. Don't worry. You're good right
probably
now.
Unhappy. Justin Geary hit us up after this 2-1 win, said, more insufferable, Sounders or Austin? They're both equally sufferable. I will suffer with both. It's been a joy to suffer with both. Big show coming up for you today. We have the biggest headlines, the stories, the notes from the midweek action. We are, as you can tell, on one. Just a tad, just a little bit. It was an absolute pleasure last night to do some MLS midweek with you on Twitter and watching 10 games at once. Almost impossible. We'll try to sort through the biggest stories there. Gago Slonina, of course, Austin FC and LAFC. Carlos Velo says, hey, if it's in my hands, for sure I will be in LA. He'd like that DP contract, but has he been DP quality? Big question mark there. Fire Attack, they thrived. And as I said, Gago Slonina is a question mark for them right now. Union, We said it wasn't time to be concerned, but another home draw with no goals. Nashville made up for a poor performance, and Sporting KC showed some fight, just maybe too much at the end of that game. We will dive into Howard Webb, an interview with him, taped on Wednesday night. Just want to make that clear. We taped that on Wednesday before the games. And we also talked to Bobby Wood on Wednesday about RSL, the U.S. national team, and of course, Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month as well. His experiences in Hawaii, in Germany, and now back in the U.S. And with the mailbag. So let's go a little bit more on the let's calm down a little bit and talk Austin FC. Charlie, how big of a statement win was this for them? 2-1 at Bank of California. The road has been a problem spot for them in their short life in MLS so far. That was something we knew they were going to have to address. We've said it over and over and over on this show. Look, the schedule is going to change for them. It's not going to be Cincy and Miami at
There's
home.
There's that term we again, Anders. There's that term we again.
Mm-hmm. Wait, yeah, I'm pretty sure you've said something about the road games. Probably everyone has.
Never said it. Okay.
All right. We'll check the tape. And here's a statement win. They moved to the top of the West on tiebreaker. They moved to the top of the supporters shield on tiebreaker. They're showing us the receipts and the mentions. How big of a statement win was this? What was the statement?
It's a big statement win for Austin, just because people doubted the quality of the opponents early on. They were racking up points, playing against DC United, who were hopeless at that point. I think for this group, they needed a big win. You played Vancouver at home, also was a hopeless at that point. But now you lose the Galaxy, you lose to Salt Lake back-to-back. This was a game that, if this is a team with quality, you need to prove it and show it right now at this stage of the season, just because you're heading into the summer and you're going to pound teams at home typically, because they go to Texas and it's like, I can't handle this weather, and teams typically fold. And on the road, you got to prove yourself. This was the game. Now, it's early on the year. It doesn't mean that they're going to win the Western Conference because they just beat LAFC, but this is one of those games that you can reflect on the rest of the season. We went on the road. We took down LAFC. They have Carlos Vela healthy and playing. We showed we can deal with them and we can have success versus them. So it's a massive game in the moment. But LAFC, let's not get it twisted. They're like, hey, we had a penalty. It was a clear and obvious penalty for them. It wasn't awarded. VAR was called. Mendoza goes and checks.
Villarreal
goes and checks and decides not to overturn his call. He sticks with his call. So there was a little controversy, but you have to give Austin a ton of credit for going to LA and coming away with 3 points. And obviously I give full credit to the group, but to Josh Wolf, who's kind of transformed Austin FC, who's pushed them. It's a big win.
So I agree, obviously, from the screaming. Maybe not as much as I sounded. The biggest part to it, in my mind, was the way it happened. In the first half, they played a high line, they pressed LAFC, and not a single time did they get played over or through. And that's not something that I thought would be possible for Austin FC. It definitely wouldn't last year, and I didn't think it would be this year. I thought Valencia was really good, playing the role that they brought him into play. If you squinted hard enough, you could believe Diego Chara was out there nipping people's heels and fouling them and then smiling. Gabrielson was really good in this game as well. Most of the chances they gave up were trying to play through LAFC's press, which is its own problem that has to be fixed and is one thing. But the fear with Austin FC was that defensively they just weren't strong enough, that individually as 1v1 defenders and as a unit that they couldn't hang with the top groups in Major League Soccer. I think that was slightly disproved yesterday. I think you can, as a group for Austin, say to yourself, look what we're like when Stuver's in there versus not. And yeah, okay, that's an excuse, whatever. But I think they could say, we get a result at least at RSL if this guy's in there. Look how good he was today. So I think there's a few moments there where it's like, on top of just the result and the win and moving to first place in the West, there are some arguments to why it looked good and what they did well. I thought they could have been more dangerous on goal as well. I'm pretty sure Fagundes hits the crossbar when it's already at 1-0, that in a chance he should have put away. And at 2-0, I think then the game changes a bit. I've talked about this on MLS today. I thought it was bizarre to put Kip Keller at right back. It looks bad the whole time. I think I did accurately text the group on that. I can confirm. Interesting decision. Kip Keller versus Brian Rodriguez at right back. And he looked lost the whole time. They had Hector Jimenez on the bench. John Gallagher came in and played winger. I don't know why those weren't your options there. But either way.
Do you think it was a pen, by the way?
What, the final play?
On Kip.
I acknowledge that I give full respect to the referees. That is a FIFA World Cup referee, Armando Villarreal.
A video assistant referee. Yeah.
And it's not my place, Charlie, to question that. Cheez-Its doesn't pay me, so I'm not allowed.
But you don't think.
Wow, you're recusing yourself?
You do or you don't think it's a pen?
I would be fine with the call either way. I think once the VAR brings him to the monitor, there's contact, and I don't know how he doesn't call it at that point. So I think on the field for him to say it's soft contact, it's the trailing leg, there's barely any, the ball's already away, fine. Then once you come back to watch it on video, I don't know how you get away from what you see. So yeah, that's what I think about it. But either way, I thought it was a really impressive performance overall in open play. Cool.
So I don't think we've talked about this, but Josh Wolf just got a new 3-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
So that's big news in Austin.
Owen Rolf starting.
Owen Rolf started. Yeah, I thought he acquitted himself well. What would you say are the biggest positives so far for Austin this year that they can build on? And what are some things that concern you a little bit going forward? I'd say one of the biggest positives is just the play of Diego Fagundes. Mm-hmm. We have a tweet here from Vincent who says, were New England wrong to use Fagundes more defensively toward the end of his spell with the Revs? His offensive output with Austin is great this year. He's been by far, outside of Driussi, by far their second best attacking player, both as a creator and a goal scorer.
He played as a winger for New England for like 6 years.
But at the end,
Bruce transitioned him to like a defensive, like a more defensive minded eight.
For sure. Yeah. But he had his chance to prove he
was just like Agudelo. I mean, Agudelo was the same.
Dude, I'm all in on the Juan Agudelo center mid thing. I'm still, listen, if Weston can't go for the World Cup, call Swags. He could still do it.
Birmingham Legion, baby.
Yeah.
Birmingham Legion. So that's one of the positives for me.
I think Fagundes.
So let's start running down positives.
I just think with Fagundes, we'll see stories like this, which is like, if you come through at a pro team at 16, maybe sometimes you need a change of scenery. You need a change of situation. It changes your lifestyle to now go to another city to be on your own. I think Fagundes needed all those things. In terms of positives, first one is Driussi because he's young. Like, you talk about Josh Wolf's contract, Driussi could be there the entire time at an elite level over the next 4 or 5 years. That is massive. I think you have, obviously, an identity of playing style and structure, which now you can start to find guys like Fagundes who fit you better than they fit where they are, maybe. Right? So you can go out and find guys that maybe have a lower market value,
Ethan Finley, I would throw out as one of those guys. As like a guy who was somewhere else and, you know, maybe they didn't appreciate his value as much as they were gonna in Austin.
Yeah, I don't know that he goes in that category for me, but
yeah, he definitely doesn't go in that category.
And then the third thing I'd say is they get no production out of two of their DPs and they've still been this successful, right?
And a U22 player.
I guess you could argue Ring has been fine for them. He's a lower end DP.
I think he's been good for them.
Okay.
They're asking for more from him in the attacking third, I think. Mm-hmm. And we saw little sprinklings of that. And sometimes sustained production with NYCFC. He's been a little snake bit. So I'll grant you that one. I think the Cecilio Dominguez side, we can for sure grant. And Rodney Redis is a no-show.
And they missed on Pochettino.
And also, by the way,
that was a big swing.
Musa Jete has been another U22 miss so far.
You bring it. Every expansion team has missed on pieces. You're bringing in a ton of pieces. You don't know how it works. Now, can you go out and move those guys and replace them for players who you have a more defined role for them? You sort of know what you're looking for culturally, socially, those types of things. So I think for Austin to say the mistakes they've made and where they sit now is a really good building platform to bring in to Josh Wolf's style. And I mean, Charlie, you know better than me. It feels like a pretty good recruiting pitch to people to say, come play for this coach, this style in this stadium. I think a lot of guys will be interested in that, both from MLS, but also from overseas.
I think you're right. Yeah.
What are some areas of improvement, Charlie, when you look at what they've done or how they're doing it, where you think, okay, yeah. Well, is that sustainable or I need to get a little bit more there?
The back line for me, it needs to be improved. I'm not confident that come MLS Cup in the playoffs, that's a back line you can rely on game in and game out. I just don't have that confidence in them yet. And then Max Urruti, he's one of those players that works his tail off. You know what you're going to get from him, but is that enough in terms of goal scoring production? Because at the end of the day, Driussi, he's going to create, he's going to score goals. Fagundes, more of a creator, but can score goals. Urruti, yes, pressing, defensive, both sides of the ball, makes good runs, hold up play. But in terms of just scoring goals, which is what you need in a lot of cases to get the team over the hump, I don't know if unless you can upgrade there. Obviously, they're losing a DP right now. Can he be replaced, or can you go out and find someone who can be a little bit more consistent goal scorer?
I think the big question right there is that, and we've made a lot of like the XG minus goal stats. Basically, mm-hmm. Are you overperforming or underperforming what the model thinks you should be doing? And generally, over the course of a season, you'll kind of ride back closer to the mean. Right now, Austin are way ahead of everybody else in that quote unquote overperformance. I think the question is, has Maxi Rooney just been on a heater? He gets on heaters. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen that from him over the years. He'll have months, 2 months, where he looks unstoppable, where every like dropping half volley that he lashes on frame finds a top corner. Is this the Diego Fagundes we're going to get long term? If these are heaters for both those guys, then it's like it's Driussi. You're hoping to get goals from Alex Ring at the 8, and then what? Unless Cecilio Domingos comes back and is more productive, I would say, than he has been
and
before.
Redis.
So there's a yeah, and Redis. I mean, I've until I see something from Redis, I've basically written him off as far as attacking contribution.
I wouldn't really ever depend on Ring for goals. That's just not his
game. I said that's the problem, right? Is if the other guys aren't consistent in that sense, and Driussi is really the one guy that you can just say, hey, game in and game out, he's going to have game breaker qualities.
Yes.
And then we're hoping to get a grab bag from the rest of the guys. Will that stand up over the course of time? But Austin fans don't care, man. They're top of the league right now. And that's a pretty darn impressive thing. I don't want like our analysis here. We're saying, oh, what could be better? Let's like pick them apart a little bit to obscure that fact. Like a team in their second season is top of the league. Now, the other thing that you have to say when you look at the standings right now is that there was a time when there were like four or five teams above 2 points per game. That has seriously equalized over the last couple weeks. Now, nobody is above 2 points per game. Who are the elite teams in the league? And let's say Austin's one of them. So who would be the like four or five elite teams in your mind right now? Just to sort of give people an idea and Austin fans an idea of like who they should be comparing themselves to over the course of the next couple weeks.
Sure.
NYCFC, Seattle, LAFC. I would say Philly and Montreal. I know we're going to talk about Philly. Those would be the ones that I feel comfortable with right now.
Okay. You wouldn't sneak Dallas in there over Montreal. You'd say Montreal over Dallas. New York Red Bulls. I know they can't win at home. Maybe they could win at home.
I wouldn't consider Montreal elite yet.
Okay. So let's just say we're at four. Mm-hmm. LAFC, Austin, NYCFC, and Philly. And we got some question marks on some of these quote-unquote elites as well. Any final thoughts on this Austin-LAFC game? I mean, we're going to jump into Carlos Vela here in a second. Let's talk Vela then.
Giresi playing a Rabona for a goal is fun.
Yeah, the Rabona was sick.
Yeah.
I mean, he's extremely special. It's a pleasure to have him in the league. All right, Carlos Vela, he drew a PK, scored a PK. We think probably he should have had another opportunity at another PK. But the question is... is he DP quality right now? The contract's not done. He says they're talking. That's good news. We sort of expected to get it done. And, quote, if it's in my hands, I for sure will be here at the number you would think that he wants. Should LAFC have any second thoughts about re-signing Carlos Vela and using a DP spot right now, given his production since the beginning of the year? He had 3 goals in the opening game. He's got 2 goals since then.
So,
and his XG numbers are, I would say, for Carlos Vela and really for like your number one DP attacking threat, quite low.
So I would say, I think the same way I felt before, which to me is the length of contract matters more than the money in the contract. I still think he bends the game like a designated player. He's got gravity, right? Like everyone knows where he is. He affects every single moment on the field. When he gets on the ball, defense is still scramble. He's dangerous on set pieces still. But it has to be a year and a half contract in my mind. Like it has to run through next season. Anything past that is just a dangerous gamble. Anything under that, with Diego Rossi gone, you have another DP deal that you can use. Arango's not on a designated player deal, right? Cifuentes is not. Kellen Acosta's not. So I think there's enough talent in that team where if this is the version of Carlos Vela you get, it could still be okay. And once you break the DP threshold, it doesn't matter to me what you pay him because it's not my money and it doesn't affect the cap. So I still think I'm still fine with it. I wouldn't give him a 2.5-year deal. I wouldn't push him through the 2024 season.
What do you think, Charlie?
Carlos Vela is special in this league. As long as he's healthy and he has, I think, service and also ambition to win, you pay him. And we've seen strikers in this league with that type of quality. If they're hungry and they're healthy, they have success. You can't replicate Carlos Vela. I think you pay him and you keep him.
That's probably the short-term side, right? Because this isn't a long-term consideration, and I'm just playing devil's advocate. You know, it's not like they couldn't go out and get somebody who produces quickly, right? I mean, it's not the universal expectation, but I'm talking about like a Pozuelo, for instance. See your puzzled look there, Dave. Or like a Pipa.
It was like a double negative, so I didn't really understand where you're trying to go. If you are a team that is currently second in the Western Conference, the higher chance that Vela plays well for you this year than a new player coming to Major League Soccer gets you to MLS cut. That's what I would say the odds are. And then you ride with it next year. Also, you have a DP spot open. It doesn't have to be and or. And if they're a team that's willing to be ambitious and willing to compete, why don't you go get your Pozuelo type player and play him alongside Vela this year?
Or go get a real proper nine.
Could do that as well. Luis Suarez.
I don't think I'd go there either.
Suarez and Chiellini on the same team, huh? Let's get all the olds. Let's put all the olds
Robbie
on the same
Keane
team.
Robbie Keane won how many MLS Cups as a center forward?
Yeah.
2014 World Cup time, baby. Let's run this thing back.
Oh, let's go. He bit him. I forgot about that.
Yeah, there was I was at the game where he bit him.
Wow.
Okay. let's put
Did
a wrap on that one.
Chiellini? Anders, we'll look into that. Let's get some more.
The sanctity of the group chat is important here. I have never mentioned that, and I shall never mention that. It will not stand up in a court of law. But two straight losses for LAFC. They went to Colorado, of course, lost 2-0, two PKs, and then they lose at home against Austin after being at the top of the table. So it's been three games without a win for them. We'll see where they go. From here, they are playing this weekend on national TV. I want to say we'll get to that later on in the show. All right, let's talk Gagos Lunina and the Fire. Three goals for the Fire. That's really good. We'll talk about the attack in just a second. Three goals given up, not of the best variety for the Fire. Tough times for Gagos Lunina. He tweeted out after this game he had a flub, a howler, a ball in his hands that squirted right through, and then the game-winning goal scored after Shaqiri scored what we thought was going to be the game-winning goal. A little bit of a situation of a bad positioning, maybe bad reading the game. I'll leave that up to your guys' judgment. But Gaga tweeted this: last couple games have not been my best. Costing vital points does not push us to our goals. It's an awful feeling, like you're letting everyone down. But that's the side of sports that is rarely talked about. I promise I'm going to keep doing everything I can to bounce back. This is growing pains for a 17-year-old, Charlie. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's completely normal considering all the noise happening around him. Poland, U.S. men's national team, are you going to get your call-up? You get a call-up from Poland. You have a lot of distractions for a young player, and you've had a great deal of success at such a young age that I think this is normal. His concentration, his focus is not quite as sharp as it was. And so this is a good learning experience for him because he's going to continue to have all of this distraction happen around him with his success. It's never going to go away. So you have to get get better at understanding how to continue to get locked in during games so that you don't have that lapse of focus. And it's clear because that goal where it goes through his hands, that is clearly down to the distraction and focus. You're not 100% there because you have all these things going on in your mind. So we all know he's skillful. We know he's talented. I know he'll bounce back, but this is a good learning experience for him.
But Charlie would have started him at the Azteca 3 months ago.
I never said start him. I don't know where you're getting start. I said call
roll
up.
Roll back the tape again. Yes. Roll back the tape again.
Call up. Call up. Yes. Start, no.
That wouldn't have been overwhelming for him?
I said 100%. And that was my point of why you can't start him in Azteca.
Charlie.
Beautiful.
they're playing NYCFC at NYCFC on Sunday. I think, I don't want to use the word criminal. I think it would be ill-advised to start him in that game where you're going to be up against it. It is the best attacking team in Major League Soccer. He clearly needs to take a breath and take a step back. You don't have Open Cup next week. That gives him a week and a half to sort of settle himself, settle his mind. As Charlie said, you also have a goalkeeper in Chris Brady, who you extended to 2026, who's the goalkeeper of the future for you. So you have someone you believe in. And you have a guy in Spencer Ritchie who was signed specifically for this purpose, to guide them through trainings, through the season as an experienced guy who can spot start for you. So it just feels like the mistake at FC Cincinnati is what Charlie said, right? Your mind's not there, all those things. Okay, let him play through it. He clearly hasn't, right? You gave him another 90 minutes. That didn't happen. And now I think as someone who's taking care of this young player and trying to help grow him, I think for everyone involved, it makes sense to let him have this game off. And you can do it in a way that isn't you're benched, you've lost your spot, all that type of stuff. But it's tough to watch. And obviously being a goalkeeper is brutal, right? You make a mistake, it leads to a goal. Brian Gutierrez gets to make mistakes and it doesn't lead to a goal. Like, that's just the reality of your position. But I would add to all of this what we're going to talk about, which is with Chris Mueller and the team, and Jairo Torres now getting healthy, they are no longer going to sit 10 players in front of him and give up the least amount of shots in MLS. This game's going to open up for them. They're going to start creating chances. There are players with less defensive responsibility, but more attacking quality on the field. And so you need to have him ready now because his challenge is going to change. And he had Shiho sitting in his lap, kind of directing things over the first month and a half. They were giving up the least amount of shots. His role was completely different. Now they're going to open the game up. They have the ability to do it. They have the quality to do it. You can't afford mistakes like this.
How much better was the attack in your mind, Charlie? Like, the goals are good. I look at it and I'm not exactly sure that it was like, rah, 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 we're three goals a game good going forward.
Bro, they outplayed and out.
But it's improving. It's like
it is improvement.
In Red Bull Arena.
You just, but like, everybody's doing that.
Stop, baby. Right, you know that's not true.
You just want to see improvement.
At the I end do know day. That's not true.
And I think for most coaches, I won't say all, but for a lot of coaches who come into a new team that's prone to give up goals and prone for defensive lapses, you just want to focus on getting the foundation right, the defensive shape. And I think Ezra Hendrickson has done that, but now it's okay. Now defensive responsibilities, check, but we have to move forward. We have to play higher up the field, bring our lines higher, create goal scoring opportunities and be a little bit more of a threat and at times be aggressive. I think we saw that in spurts for this match. So it's a step in the right direction.
Completely agree. Shaqiri playing better. Huge step in the right direction. He has been far too anonymous for far too long, and he had many moments in this game where you're like, okay, well, that's where you can create danger. Jairo Torres, Dave, I know that he's like your dude. We're excited about him. Let's give him some time, but it's so cool to see Chris Mueller just kind of come in and hit the ground running, be aggressive, be goal dangerous, not be afraid to face people up and try something. Go 1v1. Hit it into the roof of the net. Try to beat a goalkeeper. I still have quite – how do they get service for Kasper Schmelko?
Like, I don't think that's how Schmelko works. I think Schmelko is a creator. I think you're looking at a team where Mueller should be 10 plus goals on a season. Jairo Torres should be 10 plus goals.
Chibioko's a creator?
He was with Philly. Now, that doesn't mean he can't score goals, and he will score goals. And he will score goals. The interchange will be there with those three. The quick play. The goal Chris Mueller scored, right? It's a quick 1-2 in the box. He gets the opening for the finish. It's the same type of chance that Kasper Chibioko can get.
So are we talking Kasper Pozuelo? Because I know, Kasper Chibioko was not brought to the Chicago Fire to be a creator. He was brought there to score goals, to be a striker. That's what I'm saying. They're not going to get that from him unless he's closest to goal and he's playing the point. He lacks pace. I mean, there's a reason why the Philadelphia Union said, you know, we're going to move on from Kasper Chibioko. He's not the striker that we're going to invest in for the future. We're going to bring in new guys because of his lack of mobility, to be honest. I think his pace, his lack of mobility, and his ability to defend off the ball.
This Chicago Fire team was last in the league in touches in the attacking third. That will change with Torres and Mueller in the team. That will change the opportunity Chibioko gets. But he also is a guy that could have 6 to 10 assists this year. On top of, I don't think he's going to score 20-plus goals. But he could score 10 to 15. No, I agree, but
like 12. Yeah. Yeah, I'm saying I'm the 12.
And if he goes 10 and 10 or whatever, then I think that's fine for them.
Oh, fine. That would be an absolute massive win if Kasper goes 10 and 10. Let's switch to the Union real quick. 0-0 at home against Inter Miami. Sully hit us up, said, whose season has taken the most surprising, disappointing turn, and why is it Philly? You preached patience on the last show, Dave. It feels like probably that sermon still holds because Ura's not in the team, still trying to come back. But they're just it's sort of game on game on game. The XG hasn't changed that much, but the production has, and maybe that's just the Union we're going to have to accept.
Yeah, although...
All I know is people are talking about Gazdag as MVP. What I will say is this Union team isn't going anywhere. They're all they have an identity. They have players. It's about getting on getting in the right form at the right time. I don't think anyone has a concern about this team being competitive and getting in the playoffs. The concern for the Union is they want to win MLS Cup. They've won a supporter shield. They have a good group. They're investing their youth. For me, this team needs to, I think, move a couple pieces around. And I think it's just timing. Eventually, I think they'll get it right. And it is one of those things where you just have to wait, go through these ups and downs. But this is a team that you don't have to worry about.
I said Gazdag for MVP, and I still do, by the way. I mean, Callender makes an unreal save on him, but he's spurring the attack. They mauled Inter Miami in the first half of this game. It was a miracle that it was 0-0. And yeah, I think those chances will fall at some point for them.
Congratulations to Nashville, who took some harsh words from Gary Smith and turned around and got a nice win against Montreal. Any big grand thoughts on this other than, you know, God knows we all love to see a little Alex Mawile Golazo/knee slide. It's just it's a wonderful MLS thing that only MLS supporters and fans can truly understand and appreciate.
Yeah, I just think for Montreal, I'm gonna go to the Montreal side. Is that fine? Congrats, that's Nashville. Fine. Great win. I get the idea that Alistair Johnston at right wing back can shift in as a fourth defender and Lasse Lapalainen becomes your left winger. You just saw the issue, which is if he plays left wing back, he will have to be in his defensive third at times. He is a liability in that space. Chouinard is not as much of a liability. I think he still gives you attacking quality. I understand Ismael Kone is dealing with injuries now, but it feels like Nancy has now tried this, and I don't know that this is the best setup for Montreal without Ismael Kone. I still wonder if you play Hamdi in there from the start or Piet in there from the start and Chouinard at left wing back, you're more solid defensively, as well as I still think he adds to the attack. I think all of this is still because you're missing that true number nine. And so they feel like they need the attacking push from Lapalainen. And I don't know that that would be the case, but I think he struggled in the final third offensively and defensively. And you saw it in this one.
All right, let's talk Sporting Kansas City real quick. They 1-2-1 against the Rapids. Daniel Shalloway with two goals and a red card. this is a it's a gutty win for Kansas City. It's one they had to have to sort of respond to the momentum that was bleeding away quick. It had an open wound. They needed to sort of start to suture. Nick Deagle hit us up and says, hot take, SKC not that far off squeaking to the playoffs. I think they make it and win a game. So, Nick Deagle, you're on the record.
Let's go.
You're on the record
Nick
right
Deeks.
Now. I like it. You know, we've said on our conversation on Monday, if there's one thing that Peter Vermes has sort of built his brand around, it's competitiveness. That's just who the dude is, and that's what he tries to impart on his teams. So I don't think they're ever going to lay down and give up on this, and they definitely didn't lay down at the end of this game. What did you make, guys, of the red card barrage? Four red cards in about 5 minutes. Austin Trusty, two yellows. That one's pretty straightforward. But I think Daniel Shalloway's got a decent chance of seeing additional games for the kick on Nicholas Mosqueda.
Absolutely should. Absolutely.
I mean, that one's tough.
You can't run and kick an opponent. Like, there's a clear difference of a harsh red card challenge, a tackle. You come in, you miss, you're late. But you're attempting to play the ball. The ball's in play versus a dead ball situation, and you're just lining up a guy and just letting it fly. It's one of those situations where he just let his emotions get the better of him. It's a learning experience. I know Shalloway is still relatively young. I know he'll grow from this, and we probably won't see this from him again because I feel like that was out of character. And you just throw in where Sporting Kansas City is.
Yeah, the frustration of their
season. It's the frustration
so far.
of not just this match, just the whole season and 100%. Where they are.
I think you saw that Russell. I think it was Russell, Uri Russell, Emilia. They on TV. They were just hugging after the game, and the emotion, the yelling. It didn't feel like a regular season game, and obviously the blood's boiling at the end of that. But like you could see, for those guys who have been in every big game, there seemed to be that like recognition of we just need one of these. But last time we said that last week, and then they lost 7-2 in the game after that. So.
Yeah, we will see. I thought it was interesting for Andreu Fontas to get a couple hands around the neck of Diego Rubio, former teammates there, having a moment on this one. But red cards flying. Sporting Kansas City going to have some real question marks as it pertains to availability at the weekend. So we'll see what Peter Vermes runs out there. I did have a bunch of Minnesota fans up in the mentions offering a potential trade. They said, well, we'll take Peter Vermes. Like, if Kansas City don't need Peter Vermes, we would take Peter. He can come do some
Minnesota?
Things in Minnesota. Yeah, a bunch of the supporters.
I think he would do an incredible job in Minnesota.
No, now we're just talking at our you-know-whats. All right, San Jose. 5-1-1 in all comps since April 24th. I believe that is an important date. I believe that's the Mateus Almeida date of departure. And they're also in the U.S. Open Cup round of 16. They beat the Timbers 3-2. What do you think? Also, we have a question from Morgan Tenza. It says, serious question here. Jeremy Obobese has been incredible so far for San Jose. Should he be in the conversation for a June camp call-up? You want to tackle that, Charlie?
Throw it to me. Let me chest that thing up. Absolutely.
Alex Wheel over here.
Absolutely. And the reason is Jeremy Obobese has been in and out of camps. People have talked about, you know, what's his true position? You know, does he have a high enough ceiling to be in the national team? Well, he's producing. And if you look at Jackson Ewell's goal, what I love about the assist from Jeremy Obobese is one, his positioning and his ability to create that cross. And that comes from all of his wide play when he was playing with the Portland Timbers as a wide player, as a winger. You go through these transitions from one position to another and you pick up things. And being in the wide areas is you have to figure out how to generate crosses, how to create that space. And he put it on a rope, a curling rope beautifully that was a, you know, incredible finish from Jackson Ewell. But I think Jeremy Obobese just continues to grow his overall game, the hold-up play, running into the channel, his finishing. I think everything's improved. So he's definitely earned an opportunity to go to a camp. That doesn't mean he's earned a starting spot or to be in the roster for the U.S. men's national team, but I definitely think he deserves the opportunity.
All right, more Wednesday coverage, of course. You caught it on MLS Today at 11 Eastern on Wednesday with Dave and Susanna. If you're not subscribed to that on podcast front, do so. You have MLS Today every single day on the MLS Today podcast channel, as well as the Power Ranking Show, which we had a fun time on Tuesday, and MLS after dark on Saturday and Sunday. I didn't put in the rundown. Should we talk Messi before we go to this Howard Webb interview? Or
I already did a whole episode about it, but if you'd like to, we can.
I mean, Charlie, how much should we care here about Messi to Inter Miami? And if you didn't catch up on it, there were a bunch of rumors. These seem to be straight up rumors.
He's arguably the greatest player in the history of the game. If he can come to Major League Soccer, you move mountains to make it happen. And if that means you're going to give him 35% of your club's ownership, then yes, you make it happen. It's Lionel Messi. I mean, it goes without saying. He's a player. He's a once in a lifetime type of player who can come to the league. It's only going to grow. Just his experience alone, what he'll do for the club, for Miami. You talk about bringing people to the seats, getting people. That would be insanity to get Lionel Messi to Major League Soccer. What a coup that would be. I don't care if he was 42 years old. Like, you make it happen. And he still has a lot left in him. So I love it. And I'm sure if that is really what's being floated around, that it's probably closer than people think.
We'll see what happens. Leo Messi, the rumors were saying summer 2023. They were saying that 35% of Inter Miami, but he came out and denied some stuff. So did Inter Miami. Sometimes where there's smoke, there might be a little bit of fire. TBD. All right, let's talk to Howard Webb. The video assistant referees, the video review process, had previously been in stadium in MLS since 2017. It has now been moved to Atlanta into a centralized facility. Charlie and I, obviously curious about that. So I sat down with Howard Webb from Pro on Wednesday afternoon to talk through what that change means and what he's seen from the referees in 2022. Enjoy. All right, time now for an AT&T 5G call to the field. To New York City we go. To Howard Webb we go. Howard, how's it going?
Hi, Andrew. I'm good, thank you. Yeah, looking good. Looking forward to the game tonight at New York Red Bulls.
So we're talking about Atlanta here, not New York City. Tell us what's happening with video review and centralizing the facility where these reviews happen.
Yeah, well, we've finally taken the plunge to go centralized with our VAR operations since we brought VAR into MLS back in 2017. Can't believe how quickly that's gone. That's 6 years ago now, six seasons at least. We've been doing it remotely in the stadium. So the VAR and the AVR have traveled to the stadium with the rest of the crew, and they've taken their position in a room at the stadium. And that's worked fine for us, but now we've fallen in line with all the other big leagues in the world and gone to a central location. We're in Atlanta for now. We've been building out that facility for the last few weeks. And finally, this last weekend, we've taken all the games from there. And we're pretty excited about it.
What's the benefit here? Like, just from a practical sense, fans, players, managers, Pro itself, we all want the best possible level here. What's the benefit as it pertains to the job the referees are doing?
Yeah, we do. We at Pro certainly want the best outcomes. We want the VARs to have this positive contribution where they're able to identify where clear errors on the field sometimes happen and able to step in and get those rectified as often as possible. And the beauty about going centralized is that we can have many more touch points as management, as coaches, as trainers, of the VARs than we previously could have. So, you know, we'd get together, you know, now and again with this group of officials, and we'd give them guidance and feedback in person. And in between that, we'd contact them online and give them lots of guidance and updates and feedback. But now we can do that every single week. Instead of sending them out to 14 different venues and just catching up with them on the phone, now we can meet them on site. We can brief them as to what we've seen in recent games. We can talk about what we're going to expect out of the next games. And then we can monitor their procedure, their performance. We can feedback immediately. Nice hot debriefs can take place. So we think that that's going to benefit the group massively. We won't be making decisions for them. We're not going to be tapping them on the shoulder and say, do this and do that. Just like officials on the field, they have to make their decisions based on the training and the knowledge of the game that they have. But we're there to, you know, give that feedback immediately. And we think over time that's going to really benefit the performance level of the entire group.
That's an important note for folks out there. I knew it, but maybe not everybody knows it. Howard, you're not going to be tapping somebody on the shoulder saying, oh, hey, that's a red card. Make sure you review that. You're back away. You're not involved them. It's a post-review process. Tell me physically what it looks like in this facility. Are they individual rooms for each? I think the NBA might have a big open room where all this happens. And how is the physical side of it sort of playing into the actual practicality of the refereeing?
Yeah, so it's a big space. We've converted part of it. We've worked closely with our provider, Hawkeye. Hawkeye do a lot of the VAR implementations around the world. We've been with them since the start of this in 2017. So we've worked with them to create a facility in a big space down in Atlanta. And we've got separate booths where, you know, all of the same equipment that you would have seen in stadium but is now in this booth in this location. We've got, I think, 14 in total. We've got to have that number because obviously on decision day, we're going to have simultaneous games. And the VAR sits in one of these booths with the AVAR and the Hawkeye operator. They've got noise cancelling, or we're going to have noise cancelling headphones so they can just concentrate on that particular game and not worry about what's being said in another booth in another part of the building. And then the supervisor's got a position as well within that facility where they can monitor any one of the games that are taking place. They can listen to the conversations that are happening, and then we can feed back at halftime, full time, and do those briefings before the game as well. So similar to what we've seen in other parts of the world where they've been centralized for some time. We've been consulting with other organizations about best practice, and we're looking to continue to build this place out, and make it the most comfortable environment for the officials and get them to enjoy going down there. You know, they're going to be going back and forth to Atlanta instead of going to different venues, but I think they're going to be comfortable working in this bespoke space where, you know, they know what their role is and they can get on with the job.
What's a state of video review for you in MLS terms right now? I mean, 2017 till now, it's been a learning process for everyone, fans included, media folks like myself included, despite doing instant replay every week. How would you sort of, where would you say progress has been made in those 6 years or so, six seasons? And where are places you're continuing to train, so to speak?
Yeah, when I look back to 2017 and the journey that was started then on with VAR and video review and how far we've come in terms of developing our process and our understanding of what this thing is all about, you know, it's been a great journey. You know, I think we've really contributed positively to MLS. We've rectified many clear errors that otherwise would have stayed on the field. We've tried to be more efficient through enhanced processes. As we've gone through that journey, we want to make sure that we don't sacrifice accuracy, but we want to do it as quickly as we can without having any negative impact on the flow of the game. We still do work around some of the things that we did work around back in 2017 around trying to gain consistency on what should and what shouldn't be intervened upon. You know, we're dealing with human beings in a game that throws up lots of subjectivity, and we're trying to be consistent within that world. So most of the training that we do is around, you know, what is the threshold for intervention? What should be and what shouldn't be constituted considered as a clear and obvious error, and we still do a lot of that work, but we've learned an awful lot around, you know, which angles to look at, what speed to look at situations in, how to send the best angles to the referee so that they're able to make that final decision. And I think we've done really well, not perfect, and we still see some errors, and, you know, people watching this segment will think of some occasions maybe where VAR should have stepped in but didn't. And, you know, we're always aware that, you know, we're trying to reduce the number of incorrect outcomes year on year on top of all the ones that we get right, and we've been doing pretty well in terms of rectifying that. So, you know, I would never want to see VAR taken out of our games in MLS, and I hope other people watching this realize that there's a real net benefit and hold that same view.
You would have to be insane, in my opinion, to want to remove video review from the game at this point. There are too many benefits, too many positives, too many things to like. Can I ask you about the referees themselves? Because it strikes me it's a different skill set in a lot of ways, being a video assistant referee, in some ways than a referee on the field, at least in terms of the times when you step in, understanding the line where it's appropriate and inappropriate. Is there something that makes a good VAR?
Yeah, and it's a real mix of like skills that come into making a good VAR that don't always necessarily transfer to what makes a good official on the field. Sometimes, you know, one person can be good in both of those environments, but other times we've seen people really excel in the booth And we've seen other times where, you know, really, you know, top class officials on the field maybe struggle a little bit more to transfer into becoming an effective VAR. You've got to be really clear-minded. You've got to be really process-orientated. You've got to be a good communicator in being able to get your message over to the on-field officials, you know, concisely and efficiently and effectively and clearly. And also, you've got to be pretty decisive. You've got to look at something and think, you know, I know what I need to do here. I can't take all day deliberating. Should I intervene? Should I not intervene? You've got to be decisive from looking at pictures. And sometimes when you're refereeing on the field, you follow gut feelings and you sense and smell what you need to do. And also then it's about managing people, managing reactions and gaining the trust on the field. Well, you know, that's not really that relevant when you're in the booth. You're looking at images. You're trying to work out whether or not something needs intervention based on what you're seeing. You're picking up different angles. You're communicating with the operator and you're having to work under pressure quickly. So, yeah, we see people who are great in both environments, but we also see some people who really do excel in one rather than the other. And they're the people that we obviously use more often because they're the ones who are more likely to give us the best outcomes.
Communication is so important between referees in this process, but also between the referees and the process happening and the fans who are watching, whether it's in stadium or on TV. That seems like a place where you've focused, at least in this recent news, of just trying to get a little bit better, a little bit more clear so that fans watching can have a better understanding of exactly what's happening and why. What's changing on that front?
Yeah, we're always mindful of the need to ensure that people in the stadium or those watching at home on TV are able to follow the unfolding narrative. We don't want people to be in the dark, not sure of what's happening. That's one sure way of people losing patience and losing trust in video review. You know, we do a lot of work on the back end to try to pull the curtain back to show people what was happening. We'll put segments out on our website and on social media. We have calls with broadcasters on a really regular basis. And when we do that, people say, yes, now I understand. I see the rationale. I see the process. And people, you know, really buy into it. We want to be able to do that as much as possible in real time. So we're working on ways to do that in addition to things like the Twitter account that we have and we've had for some time. And also, you know, communicating live time with broadcasters behind the scenes to explain what's been checked and then what's been reviewed and why. We also want to try to do that as much as possible with the in-stadium audience. So we've invested in the last few weeks and months in some new software called Vardict, which is provided by Hawkeye, so that some sort of like graphics come up very quickly on the stadium board explaining what's being checked in those key check moments and also then what's going into review, hopefully, you know, with the outcome of people being able to follow what's happening in front of them. In MLS, they always see the referee go to the screen when there's a review happening. We think that's useful because that enables people to see that the review is happening. There's no changing of decisions just down an earpiece. The referee makes the final decision so people can see that happening. But now they can also look at a screen and see the reason why the review is happening. So we think that's a step forward in engaging people within the stadium. And the same graphics will be appearing on our broadcast feeds too.
So we're focused on video review because of the move to Atlanta, the centralized process, etc. I want to take the window a little wider here. The refereeing in general this year, and maybe even during your time leading pro, where have you seen the most improvement this year? What are things that you're proud of so far from your group?
I'm proud of the fact we brought in a lot of new officials who have, you know, adapted to Major League Soccer really well. In the US, we don't have this huge pyramid of football or soccer that you can come through. You know, they have to learn quickly in the US and in Canada. And, you know, we've seen people come through our Pro 2 development group and you know, develop their skills in that environment and then move into MLS and have taken to it really well. And we've got quite a few inexperienced officials in their first few years of their career at this level, but they've taken to it really well. So the future's bright. Alongside that, we've seen some of our more established officials do exceptionally well in international soccer. We've seen them, you know, in the 2018 World Cup take charge of games from the middle, from the center, from the VAR booth, on the line, more than any other country. We received more assignments in Russia 2018 than anybody else. And now we're looking forward to Qatar 22, and we're really optimistic that we'll have a strong crew of officials out there as well, flying the flag for pro and US soccer. So, you know, proud of that. I also think that we've played our part in trying to enhance the quality of play Major League Soccer. We work really closely with the stakeholders, be that the coaches committee or the product strategy committee and MLS staff, to try to understand what people want to see on the field from an officiating point of view. And I know that other groups feed into that, fan groups feed into that process as well. We're working this year, as you'll know, on some points of emphasis around dealing strongly with players who delay restarts. You know, we see too many times we've seen other competitions, other leagues, free kick is given to a team. The first thing the team does that's giving away the free kick is stop that kick from being taken. They stand in front of the ball. They kick the ball away. They force the team to play sideways or backwards or wait until the other team has got into shape. And it just kills the momentum of the game. So, you know, by being strong, robust and consistent in our application of that particular point of emphasis, we're already seeing, in my opinion, some occasions where the game gets restarted quickly and you've got attacking opportunity, hopefully a goal coming out of that. We're trying also to deal with things like stopping promising attacks in a really consistent way, persistent offenders, or dealing with those situations where one creative player gets targeted. They, you know, they're not allowed to play because of rotation fouls. So we're trying to ensure that our officials are equipped and prepared to deal with those situations, to identify them and then to act strongly. And also, we're looking at trying to deal more strongly with dissentful actions. We want to project a positive image of the game and of the league as much as possible. So I think we've played our part in that. You know, again, we're not perfect. We're always trying to learn from the errors that we make. And we do that in a pretty robust way, having lots of contact with the officials, feeding back in a really honest and a pretty detailed way, in the hope that that learning is absorbed and taken into the next game, so we reduce errors. So overall, great experience for me being here for the last few years, and I think we've seen some progress.
Mistakes are what fans are going to remember, and that's the unfortunate part of refereeing, in my opinion, is that referees can be very, very good for 90 minutes. They can be good for weeks, and fans, people watching, people playing, people coaching, it's often the mistakes that they remember. How do you deal with, as a group, those mistakes? How do they affect you? How do they affect referees that make them? And I'm not just saying process-wise, like, oh, hey, maybe not this game you're on. I'm saying emotionally, like, that's part of the job, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you take up the whistle, and by the way, anybody can join the local state association and become a ref, and I've encouraged as many people to do that, to contribute to the game, you know, and hopefully rise through the ranks. But when you do that, you do understand that you're taking on board a challenging job that's going to draw criticism and comment from other people, many times people that don't want to do it themselves, but they still like to comment on what you do. But you also understand that, you know, you are going to make some errors. It's pretty inevitable. You try everything you can to reduce those errors by being in the best physical shape, by understanding and reading the game, by moving into position to open up a view that will give you the answer. But sometimes, you know, the ball is given away cheaply. You know, there's a mistake by a player that puts you in the wrong position, and then you just don't have that view. And sometimes you don't call it right. I had many occasions in my own career where I'd come home from a game and just know that I'd got a world of pain for the next 48 hours, not only in the media, but also in my own head, you know, trying to wrestle with why I made a certain mistake and what I could do differently. And of course, every mistake that we make impacts somebody else. You know, if we make a mistake, then one team suffers, and these errors can be pretty impactful, and also it can be pretty painful for that team as well. So with video review, we see less of those. We see more of those situations being rectified. Quite often, you know, they're not necessarily just errors. They're situations where you could never see it anyway. You know, the only camera that opens the view is the one behind the goal. So we put things into context. We try to ensure that the officials understand that, you know, these things will happen, as long as they take the learning from it. Of course, somebody who makes too many mistakes on a regular basis won't have, you know, a long future officiating at the highest level, but we understand it's part and parcel of the game, and the only way you can prevent making any mistakes is just to quit and not continue. So as long as those trends are going in the right direction of reducing errors, you know, we hope that they're not impactful. Sometimes they will be, but we try to reduce them, and as much as possible be this positive impact, have a positive impact, positive influence on the game rather than a negative one. But you're right, mistakes stand out, don't they? And people remember those, because those are the things that can be impactful. And you can have a great game as a ref for 89 minutes, but then you make one error and that's the thing you remembered for. It's like being a goalkeeper, great saves all the time, you let one in.
Or a striker.
You're a villain, you're a striker. 10 errors as a striker, 10 missed open goals, you score the winner in the last minute, you're a hero. So exactly. The world's not fair, but that's the world we live in.
I would encourage anyone out there to... one, consider refereeing if you want to be involved. It's hard. It's thankless. I would also say to consider your words and your actions around referees at every single level. And I'm not really even talking necessarily MLS. The respect should be the baseline there. I'm more talking about those of you that are at fields with, youth soccer, men's league. Remember to treat people with respect. Remember that the job is difficult. Remember that trickles down, that your kids are watching, that other people are watching. They will model that behavior, and that's not what we want in this game by any means. You were talking about people that might like to commentate on referee decisions. And maybe, I don't know, some YouTube referees, so to speak. They might do instant replay. Charlie wasn't able to be with us, but I will pass on your points of emphasis for us if you're willing to give them. Improve us as people who play referees on the internet. What could we be better at? What are we inconsistent on? What are times when maybe you get sent a clip or you watch the show and you think, guys, you are just so wrong. What are you doing here?
By the way, I mean, the last episode that I thought that I saw was excellent. I mean, you were very, very supportive of decisions that maybe could have gone either way. I guess we just want that fair shake. We just want you to kind of put yourself into the shoes of the officials and understand the difficulty that a particular decision presents. The starting point, of course, is knowing the laws of the game and having a grasp of that. And I know you guys do that. You quote law quite often in that segment. So, you know, I appreciate that that's the foundation when you're thinking about whether a decision is right or wrong, and then just having some kind of understanding of the difficulty that a situation presents. But actually, you know, I don't mind you or anybody else having an opinion on a certain decision, because this game throws up so many different opinions. It's a subjective matter. And, you know, and who's to say that your opinion is any less worthy than my opinion, Andrew? So, you know, I don't mind people having an opinion, expressing that opinion. I think, you know, as long as there's just an understanding that that's a judgment that's made in the moment to the best of the ability of the official with the tools that they had, then the VAR makes a judgment as well based on the guidance that we're giving them around only intervening when something's clearly wrong. We don't want the VAR re-refereeing the game. As long as you've got an understanding of the way the process works, fire ahead and have your opinion, because this is what makes our game so beautiful in many respects, because it does create opinion, and with opinion comes emotion. As long as people control that emotion in the right way, then I'm all for it.
In the opinion of the referee, we think about that all the time, and I'm sure people will be thinking about things they've said in this interview a ton as they watch games this week and coming the rest of the year. Howard, appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Andrew. Keep up the good work.
All right, big thanks to Howard Webb. I'll just repeat what I said. Like, people can agree, disagree with referee decisions. That's all fair game. That's fine. I would recommend you go, you know, familiarize yourself with the IFAB laws. You know, that's an important place to come from, is, you know, a position of knowledge. But I do think it is important to reiterate, respect is number one. It's a difficult job done by people who are just like you and I. We're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. They just happen to be in a high-profile position. And the game is not the game without referees and their contribution. So big thanks to all the referees of Pro, and just as big a thanks to all the referees out there, as I'm sure many of you are, refereeing men's league, refereeing youth games, refereeing, you know, co-ed soccer, that some adult soccer that I've often experienced, and I've been somebody who's crossed the line probably, brings out the worst in people. So treat people right. All right, let's get into, is it week 13? Was week 12 the midweek? How does this work?
I know week 12 was midweek, but I don't know if that was all of week 12 or if
the weekend. Oh, God. I can never keep it straight. Either
Match
ways,
day 12.
There's soccer this weekend. There are four games on Saturday. It gets started with Columbus LAFC in Columbus at lore.com field. Unimas, Tutti, and Twitter. English, obviously, audio on the Twitter. And then there's a Fox game that night. Nashville, Atlanta. That's a good one from Judas Park. I mean, worth tuning in for that one. Nashville seems to have found a little bit of form. They're at home, and then you got the three big the big guns from Atlanta coming in. They're trying to build some momentum in that sense. Then there is a ton of games on Sunday, which gives Charlie and I a good MLS After Dark slate to dig into. It ends on FS1, Portland, Philadelphia. That's a good one from Providence Park as well. Let's hit our ESPN Plus games, because I think the national TV games sort of speak for themselves. Dave, you have an ESPN Plus game that you're looking at closely that you're excited for?
Yeah, of course I do, Weeby. Why would you ask me that in that way?
I don't know.
Do you remember when we came in and I was like, we don't even need to do this meeting. Let's just get to the show.
Yeah.
I didn't know we were going to do this. So.
Yeah, you want me to jump in? I can jump in for you if you want.
Yeah, you can go first. But
You sure? Everything
yeah,
good?
Yeah, you can go first. All
right. Okay, cool. I'm going to go, I think I'm going to take Cincinnati, New England.
Ooh.
Because we're wondering kind of about the bona fides for both. We know what the top end for New England is, but they haven't necessarily reached it yet. They're starting to sort of, you know, starting to sort of show us signs that maybe it's coming, but we also know there could be big changes coming this summer. Right now, Adam Buksa and Carlos Hill in tandem are must-watch. I think DeJuan Jones and Brandon Bye, personally, are must-watch. And then this is like the end of the Matt Turner era in MLS. So celebrate it, enjoy it. Ought to be fun. And then on Cincinnati's side, you know, Doyle's calling them perhaps maybe a playoff team. And that's high praise given the past since he has in this league, very recent past. But Lucho is the new, or is the 2022 Carlos Hill, so to speak. Brandon Vasquez is one of the best quote-unquote values in the league. We talked about before this show the best values in the MLS Players Union release, and Brandon Vasquez is right up there. So I want to see what Cincinnati can do at home. Can they knock off the Revs? To me, that would be a statement game for them, beating a team that was a Supporters Shield winners last year that has really high-end talent, especially in the attacking part of the field. If they can do that, their bona fides will get just that little bit brighter.
I'm going Austin, Orlando City. I think Orlando City have – I can't really figure out where they are.
They've been disappointing for being a 1.67 points per game team, if that makes sense.
They have been. I mean, they beat Philly in the U.S. Open Cup, and you're like, okay – and they won against Toronto. Toronto, I think, has been shocking. They won in, you know, the 90th minute with Kyle Smith. So, but they got trounced by Montreal 4-1. They got trounced by New York Red Bulls 3-0. So
the trouncings are here.
A lot of trouncings.
Yeah.
They can win these games, but then they also get blown out. So I don't know where Orlando City is. I think this will be a good test for them, because Austin coming off a win against LAFC, playing at home. If Orlando City can show something, this would be the match.
Have you done your research? You got it?
Yeah, I actually have like seven. Okay. But I think the obvious one to me is Colorado hosting Seattle. It felt like a bona fide creating win for Colorado last weekend. And then you obviously have the frustration at KC. Now, I think to me the win against LAFC is more meaningful than the loss, because my question still is, can they elevate themselves to win in a big must win one game moment, not over the course of a season, the ebb and flow. And so this now becomes another opportunity where Seattle's coming in. Neither of these teams have Open Cup midweek. Can you get a big win against a Seattle team that I think is one of the four or five best squads in MLS? So that's the big one. And then the other one I was going to say is similar to what Charlie said about Orlando, San Jose SKC. San Jose now 5-1-1 under Covello in all comps. But can it be a consistent thing? Can you be a pace setter? And if not, can KC do better than they did last week, which was the big Open Cup win into a 7-2 loss? So I think that'll be interesting.
Going to be survival mode, I think, for KC, given the absences that they are going to have. We'll be back on Monday to wrap up what we think is week 13, TBD. We're going to finish this show off with an interview from Bobby Wood, RSL going to Montreal this Sunday. That game's at 4 p.m. Eastern on MLS Live on ESPN+, so check that one out. Shout out to all of our listeners who are thinking about thinking about the legacy of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in our country, and what it means. It's a very complicated history, but this is the month to think about those things, and also to remember that there's some attitudes, some opinions, some treatment of people out there that is not just. And if you are confronted by that, or you hear it from your friends or your family, or you're out walking around and you hear somebody get accosted for the way they look or their background, to if you're able and you feel safe to do so, to step in or to tell those people that that you're not about that and that they matter to you. So for those of you out there who want more information on Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, MLSsoccer.com has some information, and Google is also your friend as well. Let's hear from Bobby Wood, and we'll see you on Monday, everybody. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Out to Utah we go, to Bobby Wood. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, what's up? How are you guys?
We are doing wonderful. How are you doing? Seems like a party at the Riot these days. The vibes are immaculate. Andrew Brody for president, man.
Yeah, he's awesome, man. And, you know, I'm happy that he got his contract extension. Great guy on and off the field, hard worker, can play multiple positions, and, you know, hard work pays off. So everyone, including myself, couldn't be happy for him.
When you see that ball hit the back of the net, as it rolls out, I think anybody watching the game is thinking, okay, it's perfect pace.
It's
on your right foot.
Yeah.
Come on, you haven't scored a goal before, Andrew. You just signed a contract extension. It's the 88th minute, man. Put this in the back of the net. When he does it, what are you thinking? Like, what goes through your mind in the moments before, during, and happened, after?
It just happened so quick, you know. It kind of just jaw-dropped, especially because looking back, I didn't realize he was that far out. I thought he was around the penalty spot, but then when we saw the goal again, it was around that like 18 yard like circle. So, you know, just, it was a banger for sure, and a good one to have at the right moment.
I'm curious, you've played most of your career in Europe and in Germany, and you have all these massive stadiums, crowds crazy. You come to Salt Lake. What were your expectations, and how does this crowd, the supporters, how have they impressed you, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think what wanted me to come here was you know, they sold me on kind of just being like a family type vibe, and that's the feeling I've had since the first time I got here. And then with the new ownership and stuff, with Pablo being the coach now, I feel like we have an identity, and, you know, we might not play the best every game, but, you know, playing at home, we're hard to play against. And if I was on a different team, I really wouldn't want to play against us, just the way because of the way we play. We're hard, and, you know, it's hard to break us down, and we're fighting throughout the whole game. And, you know, with the fans behind us, with the altitude, and it's just tough, especially in the summer. It's hot too. There's a lot of things going for us.
So you had a little bit of a limbo period, and you got the back end of it with RSL. But we've talked about it for a long time with the club of like, hey, is there going to be a resolution going forward? Well, there is one now. How have you felt this new ownership group? What has changed, or what have you seen change, or what has just sort of like transitioned a little bit?
It starts with just like the little things, you know, like before the season they got together, you know, had us for dinner, and, you know, they had us, all our families at the stadiums, you know. They wanted to ask us what they could do to help our families feel comfortable at the stadiums. And, you know, before, our families had to just sit in the stands. We never had like a little family suite for the kids or anything like that. And now there's, you know, there's like a little playground in there, and, you know, it's awesome. And things like that, it means a lot to a lot of the players. And it's just, we feel that they want the best for us, and, you know, we respect that. You know, there's nothing better than having a ownership that wants the best for their players, and it's just the little things like that.
Do you feel like there's an RSL against the world type mentality, the vibe across the league, because it's so,
you're
so
smiling,
isolated? You know, you had this crazy playoff run. You know, what does it feel like to be in that locker room, and how do you guys think about the rest of the league?
I mean, you know, we focus on us. We know that we don't get the respect that we deserve a lot of the times, you know, maybe because we don't have some big star or anything like that. But, you know, we, like I said, we focus on us. We know what our identity is, and that's what we're focused on. And, you know, we're always going to come together and work hard. Everyone's going to work hard for each other, and that's all we care about. And as long as that's on the field, and we're not going to worry about anything else out there.
You had to laugh a little bit, though, after you guys won without shooting, right? Like, you had, there had to be an element, like, in the locker room looking around, just like,
no, I mean, we still talk about that. That's the game of soccer, you know? It's so unpredictable, you know, how that game was going. You would have never thought we would come through, and somehow we did, and that's why the game's so fun. You know, you just never know, and, you know, we took advantage of winning that first game, and, you know, we won the second, and, you know, that's what happened.
How David Ochoa, is he a villain in training too? By the way, I love his WWE character, but is he like this in training too?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, it is what it is. He, you know, right now we have Zach in goal, and he's doing an amazing job. And, it's tough to say. He does his thing. He's just going to do his thing, I guess.
Tell me about what's coming here for you guys, because this is really just the beginning for RSL with the ownership group. There's Jefferson Savarino coming, which you've got to be pretty excited about when it comes to service into the penalty area. Like, there are reinforcements coming. What can this team be this year in your mind? What do you guys talk about when you talk about goals, and how do you think these reinforcements are going to change the game a little bit for you?
You know, right now, after, we just want to continue what we've been doing so far this season. You know, we still had some bumps on the road, but, you know, we had a lot of injuries, and, you know, a lot of guys stepped up, and it didn't matter who was out. We still got a lot of results so far this season, and that's just the identity we want to stay at. And, you know, we want to keep that. It's just ugly to play against us, you know, our mentality, you know, our fight and everything. And, you know, that's always been important to Pablo, and he's really installed that into our team. And, you know, whoever comes in, it doesn't matter. We, you know, we have to get them on the same page and, you know, have them fight with us. And that's our job as the players that are already in this club, to help the players that whoever's going to come in.
Enough of the fight, rah, rah. I want to know about you as a striker.
I've seen you.
I want to say at least with the U.S. men's national team at your peak, some of the friendlies against Holland and Germany. Mm-hmm. I was like, who is this kid coming onto the scene? What's been the best year of your career so far? And how did they get the most out of you?
With the national team or with
in club?
Just in general?
Yeah. Club?
You know, I'd say there's different parts to look at. There's different ways to look at it. You know, my best season was probably with Union Berlin, and the season after I transferred to Hamburg, and playing wise, but probably the most I learned to deal with very tough situations were the years after. And, you know, outside of soccer, of reasons why I wasn't allowed to play or, you know, didn't get a chance to play, those are the times I learned the most to kind of just keep my head down and, you know, just be mentally strong and just keep working for myself. And, you know, I learned a lot during those couple years, and, you know, I'm proud of that.
What would you say you learned? And I would ask you, because we've talked to you about this before, the mental side of this game is oftentimes bigger than the physical one in some ways. What do you think you learned in those years? And how would you sort of characterize physical versus mental in a player's career?
Yeah, for me, it was just, how can I say this? Just not falling into a hole mentally, you know, keeping my head above water, and kind of just not letting that negativity that I had out in Germany ruin my personal life, you know. And it's always tough to separate the two, but I think I did a very good job of separating the two, and, you know, still being able to, you know, enjoy my family and not let that bring me down to where I'm just depressed all the time. And, you know, I think if I was younger and that happened, it would have been very tough. But, you know, at the age and, you know, my first daughter coming, I looked at life a little bit different. And, you know, it's very good to, you know, have that now, that type of mentality.
I'm with you. I've been there. You know, it's hard not to let the anger consume you. But you did. So I'm curious to know right now, you know, a lot of people said, wait for Bobby Wood to get fit, wait for him to get up to 100%. Would you say you're there now? You're 100%, or you're still working to get to 100% fitness? And then what do you need within that RSL team to be at your best, to make sure that you're scoring 15, 20 goals a season?
You know, I think for me right now, I feel like I'm doing pretty good. You know, the stats don't say much, but just there's a lot of parts of the games that, you know, people don't see. And, you know, I feel like the players on my team respect it. And, you know, right now that's – obviously goals are nice, but, you know, how the vibe is right now with this team, it's more about, you know, doing things that no one likes and you know, somehow getting results and doing things for the team, you know? And I think I've had my chances, and I think if I keep this type of, you know, energy up and, you know, hard work, the goals will come with it, you know, and I just have to keep my head down and just keep going at it. And I think it'll fall in place of where I want to be statistically and physically and everything like that. But right now I think physically everything's pretty good. You know, getting that groove again, playing, I don't know, like 9 games in a row for the first time in I don't know how long. So,
getting that joy back.
Yeah. Getting the joy back for sure. You know, just letting things flow, and I'm slowly feeling that. And, yeah, it's like I said, I couldn't be happier in the situation I'm in right now. And, you know, it's been great. You know, I'm just going to keep doing my thing. And, you know, I think things will flow once, you know, if I just keep at it.
Well, one of the reasons, Bobby, we have you on, of course, RSL and what you're doing on the soccer side is one of them, but it is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month here. Mm-hmm. And we had a great conversation last year with Sean Davis. And if folks haven't heard that one, go check it out. He had some very interesting things to say, stories to tell about his family experiences that they've had, both within the pandemic, but historically in the United States. I want to take you back to your childhood in Hawaii, man. That's an interesting place to grow up culturally. That is not like the rest of that's not the continental U.S., so to speak. And it's still varied here. What was it like growing up in Hawaii and growing up as an Asian kid, among many other things?
I mean, honestly, it was pretty. When I was growing up, I didn't really realize that it was, you know, everyone's basically Asian in Hawaii. You know, everyone's got some type of mix. So growing up there, I didn't really notice anything weird. But, you know, after I moved to California, and then after a year in California, moved to Germany, I started realizing, you know, I am a little bit different. And that was a little bit hard to deal with, especially being in Germany by myself. I was 14 and I didn't understand it fully, but what I learned is just kind of being proud of who you are and kind of loving yourself. I think that's the most important, and just accepting who you are. And I think once you embrace that, and you can, nothing will bother you, you know.
Have you embraced the idea that you're a role model and an icon for a lot of Asian American kids? And how did you connect with that culture as a kid? You know, because you're also black too. A lot of people don't know that you got some black in you. I think it's one of those things where it just clicks with you. You understand how you're kind of the face for a lot of kids.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it doesn't hit just because I kind of don't see myself like that. But, you know, I try to help out as much as I can. And I think for kids, it's just what can I say? Just be true to yourself, really. You know, and just love the culture that's behind you, and don't be ashamed of it. You know, growing up Asian was, you know, in Germany, it was always a little bit strange, especially because in the south of Germany, they're pretty, you know, they're old school, and it's just different. You know, you get looked at a lot, and I wasn't used to that at first. And there's a lot of, you know, Asian jokes and stuff like that. And, you know, even, you know, with black kids, just some of the black kids on my team, you just hear the N-word all the time in the locker room. And it's, you know, I found that very weird. But, you know, it's seeing all of these things, I learned to kind of just be open-minded to so many different things, you know, and it's hard to explain.
How hard was exactly it to leave your family at that age, man, to go to a culture that you didn't probably understand at all in that moment in your life? And at an age, I think for most of us, where, you know, you drop me in someplace 14 that's not my home with my parents, and that's gonna be tough for me.
It was tough, you know. It was hard not having a backbone to always have, you know, always be there to support me in, you know, tough times, and, you know, being bullied and all that. And, you know, I learned to kind of just, I basically learned how to deal with these things by myself. And it made me strong for mentally, you know, it made me strong mentally, basically. And, you know, it's nice that I wouldn't take those experiences away at all. And, it, you know, I love how I turned out and, you know, everything that I'm very cultured, you know, I got my family's white, my dad's, you know, half black Japanese, my mom's Japanese, you know, I have family in Hawaii that are, you know, mixed races, you know, family in Japan that are, you know, only Japanese. So I love how it's important to me for my kids to see different cultures and have that be normal and, you know, not be ashamed of who and what they are.
How do you feel Asian culture in your life, like your family life, your personal life?
Yeah. You know, growing up, I'd say it's kind of like I grew up with a lot of different Asian culture, to be honest. You know, in Hawaii, it's just like this big bowl of all the different types of Asian cultures, you know. So that's kind of how I grew up. It wasn't just Japanese. I grew up with a bunch of Asians or a bunch of Korean, a bunch of Chinese, and it was cool. You know, to me, that was normal. You know, growing up in Hawaii, everyone was basically half Asian or something. And then, you know, moving to California, everyone was mainly white. So that I thought that was a little weird, but it's not something I thought about. It was just something different. And then, you know, as I got older, I kind of realized, like, you know, without even knowing it, there's, you know, things are being a little bit whitewashed, I guess you could say. And I thought it was, you know, if I grew up, for example, with hip hop and everyone's listening to rock, I thought I had to like rock to fit in, you know, so things like that. It's nothing big, but without even knowing it, you know, things you do as a kid to kind of fit in.
How have you felt the difference for your family being in Germany to now being in Salt Lake as Asians? So having that Asian culture with you, have you noticed a difference? And then throughout the pandemic, have you felt, how has your family coped, you know, being in Salt Lake?
Honestly, it's been very smooth. I haven't had any problems since moving back to the States. It's been very welcoming, you know, and, you know, I like to keep to myself. So it's not like I'm out and about doing anything crazy. So, you know, it's been very smooth. My family feels very welcome. You know, kids are in school, you know, enjoying. She looks like she's having. So,
the mountain life is a good life.
Yeah. It's been very smooth, you know, and, the school she's at also do a very good job of, you know, teaching all the different cultures. And, that's extremely important to me to, for Ella to, you know, see, but not really shove in her face at the same time, you know?
So let's end you with this, Bobby, because this is a World Cup year, and I'm always curious. How are you watching the games now? Are you watching the games? Are you invested? Are you like rah-rah on your couch? You don't seem like, you seem like more of a chill guy, but...
Yeah, I watch all the games, you know. I'm not like screaming or anything, but, you know, I watch as a fan now. You know, obviously I would love to be with the team again, but, you know, seeing what they've been doing and, you know, the youth that have been coming up, it's actually pretty sick to see. You know, there's so many young players at big clubs that, you know, when I was playing with the national team, it wasn't really like that. And, you know, it's amazing to see the levels that these guys are on. And, you know, I hope the World Cup goes great. You know, it's going to be exciting to see, you know, how that team does. And, you know, I'm rooting for them for sure.
You know where I'm going to go? The number 9 position for this U.S. Women's National Team.
Yeah.
What are your feelings for what do they need? What's the type of player profile they need to play that position with this young group, in your opinion?
I think from the games I've watched, they've played so many. I know they want to play a certain style, but at the same time, I'm not really sure what that number nine needs to be exactly. I think it's whoever fits in the best, you know. It doesn't have to be a big guy. It doesn't have to be a quick guy. It's kind of whoever has their groove around the World Cup time. I'd say I'd put them in that slot. It doesn't, you know, you can even put a false nine or whatever. But, you know, I think it's they need a guy that's just going to be consistent around that time. And
so whoever's in form, in your opinion.
Yeah. In my opinion, with the situation right now, and I think you just put in whoever's hot. You know, number nine position's always kind of a
streaky.
it's a streaky position. So, you know, I just give the confidence to whoever's hot at the moment and, you know, just see how that goes.
Do you keep in touch with any of the guys from your era?
Yeah, I keep, like, every once in a while, you know. Everyone's kind of doing their own thing now, but, you know, every once in a while I'll see them and, you know, you say what's up and little chats here and there, but that's about it.
Maybe the group chat will get firing for the World Cup. We shall see.
Yeah.
But best to you, Bobby. Glad to hear that you and your family are enjoying Utah. Clear that the people at the Riot are enjoying RSL right now. Best of luck, man. We'll be rooting for you.
Thank you.
Best of luck.
Thank you. Take care, guys.